Welcome to the 11th episode of the Movie Lovers Podcast. On today's episode, we discuss The Avengers Age of Ultron with the Movie Network's Randall Unger and special guest Kevin Mascara. We also discuss everything superhero related and our Films We Watch segment.
Designed to save the world. People who look to the sky and see hope. I'll take that from them first. There's only one path to peace. Their extinction.
I tried to create a suit of armor around the world. But I created something terrible.
Artificial intelligence.
It's called the Ultron program.
I'm sick of watching people pay for our mistakes.
Isn't why we fight so we can end the fight and go home?
Well, you amazingly failed.
Nothing but our wit and our will to save the world. So stand and fight.
No way we all get through this.
I got no plans tomorrow night.
I'm always picking up after you boys.
We can tear them apart. From the inside.
That's the best you can do!
Gotta
ask. For starters, Kevin, since you're the new guest, we'll start with you. What was your view on Avengers Age of Ultron?
Well, I guess I definitely looking forward to it. I mean, especially all the buzz after the first Avengers success there and how good I thought it was. And then really riding the coattails of Captain America Winter Soldier, which I thought was absolutely phenomenal, just to come see the Avengers and see how they were going to try and connect that with Iron Man 3. I thought, you know, this has some legs to go somewhere. I would say overall, if I had to describe anything, I think it is a true summer blockbuster. It's going to be a lot of action. You do still get your you know, quips there, some of your you know, great one-liners that people have learned to love and expect from a Marvel movie. But I actually thought it was a little weak on the story. You know, they had some, it had its moments, but it, to me, it definitely seemed like a loose story and with a lot of setup or hints towards future projects, which makes sense. I mean, basically, Marvel's lineup is out all the way till 2019. With as long as things are successful, who knows? It'll probably keep on going forward. So I would say, I don't know, 1 out of 5. I'd definitely give it a 3.5, I guess, if I had to give it some form of rating. And that's mostly because I've gotten greedy, you know. I've gotten a lot of great Marvel movies, so they've set the bar too high that it's, you know, compared to those, it was good, but I could have had a little more.
And what about you, Randall?
I mean, I thought it was a solid blockbuster, you know, typical summer movie. But to be honest, I don't really see much of a difference between this and the first one. Like, they're both. There's so much action going on that it's hard to really, you know, absorb the story. And it's just, it was kind of frustrating because I do agree with Kevin that the story was a bit lacking. It could have focused on the characters a little bit more. They did focus on Hulk and what's her name?
Black Widow.
Black Widow. That was like the only human element, and Hawkeye. But, you know, they needed a little bit more of that. They needed more of a balance between story and action. I think the story took over the entire movie, and it just came off as a little too loud and crazy for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I thought I was going to be the Lone Ranger here. I thought, you know, I was going to hate it and everyone was going to love it, but I'm kind of on agreement with you guys. I was really disappointed with this installment of the Avengers. I mean, to be honest, I am not the biggest lover of the Marvel movies that are coming out. I find them a little bit dull and a little bit too campy compared. I realize that after watching this that I'm very much on Team DC. I'm very much into the Batmans. I'm really looking forward to the next movie with Superman versus Batman. I even really enjoyed the Superman Man of Steel.
Kevin.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I could not keep that one in. Yeah.
I mean, I like parts of Man of Steel. The movie as a whole didn't really grab me, but I did like the Kryptonian technology and all that. I thought Henry Cavill was a pretty good Clark Kent.
I actually saw that with random theaters, thinking, all right, this has got to be good. And I would say within an hour of that movie, I'm just rocking back and forth. I'm like, this is still not ending.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is not a dark character. It doesn't work. Yeah. Christopher Reeve, like Superman 1, they got it right there for that type of character.
Even Superman Returns kind of worked a little bit because it was bright and kind of cartoonish, but not overly cartoonish. It was just a fun movie. This was it didn't feel like Superman. It just felt like Bizarro almost. It was just way too dark, way too violent, and it's not the fun superhero movie, you know, we all have come to expect over the years from Superman anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally get those arguments, and they're very valid. But I don't know, I kind of like a little darkness in yeah. these superhero movies. I guess it's me growing up, like yeah. you guys probably growing up with the original or our original Tim Burton Batmans, and how that kind of led the future to the Nolan Batmans and Zack Snyder Supermans and whatnot. So it seems like that's kind of like in my wheelhouse. Whereas something like the Avengers, I find that they're trying to go after joke after joke after joke, and it gets a little jarring after a while. You know, I like that one scene in this Avengers where they're all kind of sitting down and they're trying to pick up Thor's hammer. I thought that was a nice, wholesome, funny scene. But like you said, Kevin, they are trying to go for the one-liners, and it's a little bit too self-aware. Like I kind of roll my eyes every time there's a pause, that one line, and then they, especially coming from Christopher Evans, Captain America, and you know just going from there. So yeah, it's just. I was a little disappointed because I and this is the second time I saw it. I resaw it for our podcast today, and I found that, you know, it falls victim of a memorable beginning act or beginning scene, and then just way too much filler in the middle, and then a great ending or you know a more memorable ending. But there was just a little too much talk for me, I realized the second time in the middle, that after a while I had no idea what was going on, even watching it for a second time.
I was saying, I was talking to Randall a little bit earlier about this. You know, I really do like Joss Whedon. Mm-hmm. I guess the rumor from what I kind of heard was his cut was over 3 hours. So this is definitely a condensed version from what the studios recommended. Mm-hmm. And just from the other Avengers and something as from when we were younger, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that he wrote, and you could tell how he develops characters, how he's more subtle with the payoffs of the one-liners. To know, like, I guess what he can do, and granted how the original Avengers I thought was definitely the stronger movie of the two, mm-hmm. I'd be very curious to see when when the DVD comes out, what the director's cut would look like, and to see how many people would actually appreciate this movie, like ourselves, more so knowing that, you know, that's Whedon's true vision, as opposed to when you get something in the $1 billion mark, like a movie like this, you're going to have too many cooks in the kitchen.
Oh, sure, sure. And that's a great expression for that, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. I feel like for a while, like a big complaint for a lot of superhero movies was that there's too many villains. You know, that was a big thing. Even with the Christopher Nolan Batmans, there was a little complaint of the Dark Knight, where there's, you know, the Joker, then there's Harvey Dent's Two-Face character, and you know, what is too much, you know, and I feel like here, you know, it's kind of the same situation, just with superheroes. There's way too much stuff going on, way too many people, you know, that are just, you know, coming into the kitchen, saying their one-liners, having way too little camera time to actually amount to anything big. And I feel like that they, you know, it was just brimming with cameos and with celebrities, and the celebrity was kind of more aware than the actual plot itself.
Yeah, you're right. Too many people, too much action, too many characters to keep track of. It's really confusing. I mean, for even a casual, you know, movie watcher, and that's what frustrates me. Like, this movie is like overly complicated, just for the sake of being overly complicated, and you know, just I don't know. Audiences, you know, I mean, they'll still eat it up, mm-hmm. but it's just not quality storytelling.
Do you think it's worth all the praise that it's been getting? Because it's already topping a lot of you know, best of the year lists already, you know, that are coming out, you know, the halfway mark. Do you think it's deserving of that?
I mean, it's Avengers 2. Of course it's going to be deserving of... I mean, I don't think it's the greatest movie ever made, but, you know, the average kid will love it. And I've said it before numerous times. I think the superhero movie should be tailored to first children and then mm-hmm. parents secondary. You know, I think that superhero genre should cater to everybody, but kids first. And I think this is more than appropriate for young ones, even though there are some very dark scenes, very violent scenes with Ultron in particular. But overall, I thought it was an okay movie, not great.
Do you have that same sentiment, Kevin, about superhero movies catering to children first and adults second?
I mean, I think you kind of touched on it earlier. I think that's the true division between Marvel versus DC. Mm. I mean, you know, as much as I like movies, I also realize it's a business and industry. Marvel is now owned by Disney, mm-hmm. Which was very strategic, because from what I understand, the reason they did is they didn't have enough strong male characters. Disney princesses kind of reigned supreme for a while with them. Mm-hmm. So better way to get people to go to their parks and buy their products and get something like Marvel. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that's more of the focus there. In terms of DC, yeah, you do have very... they're clearly just going the darker route. I'm pretty sure in some interviews they said they're not... you can't imitate Marvel, so why even try? So go the opposite direction. There is a catering to kids. I'll agree there. I actually would be a little more concerned with what you guys are saying about this whole thing about too many characters. Because if many people like you two have that mentality, we are screwed for superhero movies till like 2020. The trend is ensemble. Mm. Everything. Batman versus Superman. Aquaman's supposed to make an appearance. Wonder Suicide Woman. Squad's going to be coming up. Wonder Woman's supposed to make an appearance in Batman versus Superman. You got Justice League. You got a whole another set of Avengers movies coming out. Captain America is basically like another Avengers 2.5, essentially, with how many people are expected to be on that. So if all of those are considered too noisy, then we're going to have some blockbusters coming up that, in theory, nobody will enjoy.
I mean, like you said, Kevin, it's a, you know, film industry, it's a business. So the film execs, they don't care about catering to kids or adults. They just want to make money. And you just listed like 20 or 30 superhero franchises alone that are going to basically, you know, hit each summer for the next 10 to 20 years, and basically they're going to probably the majority of them be like Avengers, you know, loud, crazy, too many characters, and lots of action and very little story, and that's depressing to me, you know.
So in retrospect, would you want to see more standalone films rather than have everything grouped together?
I mean, I kind of like the way that Marvel, you know, they introduced Iron Man and then Captain America, and then, you know, they built it up.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the first Avengers, which I thought was pretty good, better than the second one. Hopefully DC will do the same, but it doesn't look like it's going that way with Batman versus Superman. The title alone is contradicting what I'm saying. You know, it's going to be Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and who else is in it?
Aquaman. So whatever the guy from Game of Thrones is going to be.
Yeah, Jason Momoa.
I mean, they're playing catch up with Marvel.
Yeah, yeah. They just want to.
Absolutely.
They're late to the party, and they just want to throw in the top four super friends to, you know, like you said, catch up.
I mean, listen, I get where you guys are saying. I'm probably more of the fanboy, I guess, of the three of us in this, so I definitely like seeing them. But clearly, when these movies are done right with a lot of characters, you'd appreciate. The first Avengers was done right. There were a lot of characters there. What was your one exception? Okay, Hawkeye didn't get enough stage time. They made up for that.
Yeah.
This past Captain America had a number of superheroes in it, and it is one of the strongest, easily my top three nowadays,
of the Marvel
of any superhero film. I mean, it touched on modern day type subject matter in terms of government intervention. It had a great payoff with, like, I think the villains, like another strong villain that could easily flip with Winter Soldier. You had some great actors. You had some extra cameos from other superheroes. Your Falcon, your Black Widow there. That's a perfect example of it's not just Captain America, and I think they did it right. I think the twist now is altering your storytelling a bit. This was more of like a spy movie. Mm. You know, your first few Avengers were true campy superhero movies. They got to tweak it again, and I'd be curious to see what they're going to do with all these upcoming movies.
Huh. That's interesting. Elaborate a little bit more about the spy element of things. That's interesting, because I didn't quite grab that.
Just the whole point of, you know, there's secrecy, there's government agents. They really played up the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. concept. Mm. You know, to me, it almost kind of had like a Mission Impossible, Bourne vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot grittier. Like, I guess Captain America, for example, Winter Soldier, to me, is a movie like my father. For example, he doesn't know really superheroes. He might know like one or two of the big ones, but that was never his thing. It wasn't his time. But if I made him see Captain America, Winter Soldier, he'd love it, because he would compare it to some of those original action-type movies with just the pacing of it. Whatever the Russo brothers were on, when they directed that, they did something right. And I think they're actually going to be directing a couple of more upcoming Marvel movies, because they took the genre, they showed they were fans, mm-hmm. and then they applied a slightly different storytelling method to it to open it up to other audiences. Because at the same time, you have this many movies, we keep telling the story the exact same way, it's going to get boring really fast. It's like any good television series. Like, these sets of movies are like seasons. You got to tweak it. If not, you know, you're just going to oversaturate and nobody's going to want to watch it.
Good point. And my sentiment exactly. Randall, what would you say with this collection of Marvel movies, what's your favorite out of the bunch?
Out of all of them?
Coming up or that happened?
That happened.
Actually, I thought the Amazing Spider-Man movies were pretty good, both of them together as a companion piece.
Oh, wow.
I just thought, you know, they don't get a lot of, you know, Spider-Man is tricky. And over the years, it's been tried twice. A third attempt is being made now. But I thought Andrew Garfield knocked it out of the park. And I think that was one of the more human stories in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Hmm.
And I just thought the visual effects and music and everything was just phenomenal in that one. Plus, the chemistry between Garfield and Emma Stone was great. Because, you know, they actually are going out in real life. But
I myself haven't watched the Amazing Spider-Man, the newer Spider-Man movies. I think I'm still trying to digest the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. I'm still not over that yet.
Since 2007.
Yeah. It's too soon. It's too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah, and I think they're already trying to cast a new Spider-Man.
Kid from Hugo. What's his name?
Asia Butterfield. He was in Ender's Game, which I didn't see actually, but I heard was terrible.
So they're just catering to an even younger audience, it seems like.
Yeah, and I don't know why they didn't just keep Andrew Garfield, because he was good. I thought he was a lot better than Tobey Maguire. I don't know. Kevin's been a lifelong Spider-Man fan, so.
Interesting fact. Randall and I are from Forest Hills, Queens, which is Spider-Man's hometown.
Yeah.
So if there's any superhero character that I love more than anything, it's Spider-Man. And that's why it pains me to say I really don't like any Spider-Man movie. I thought I did, but
I thought you liked the second Tobey Maguire one.
It's a good movie, but compared to other movies and how they're done, you start realizing that they haven't done it justice, and that's why Sony has to now share the spotlight with Marvel in terms of doing these new movies. It's you have a great character that is loved by all, well recognized. I would probably argue it is the number one most recognized Marvel character. You know, it's like Spider-Man is an equivalent to like a Batman or Superman on the DC side. And he hasn't had his due yet. He's had mediocre movies or really bad ones. Spider-Man 3. there's so much to mention, so many layers, and look, I'm not impressed with any. There's only two Fox superhero movies that I liked. One that I pretty think is very common with people, and that is the reboot of the X-Men, First Class. Actually, with that, I'd say Futures Past. I thought they finally got it right. And this is probably one that many people don't agree with. I think their take on Punisher, I think that was Fox did it, right?
I'm not sure, actually.
Was pretty good. They haven't done Fantastic Four, right? What am I talking about? Sony was Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Any way you slice it, I like Spider-Man, and nobody's done it right.
Well, maybe Asia Butterfield will cut it for you, Kevin.
I hope so. You know what it was? It's Garfield, who I thought was a good Spider-Man. I think he was a horrible Peter Parker. It's kind of what you always talk about with Batman.
What?
Depending on the actor, you'll say he was a good Batman or he was a good Bruce Wayne.
Right, right.
There's dualities of characters like that. Like in Iron Man, you could get away with it. Iron Man is a cocky jerk as Iron Man or as Tony Stark. These others, you see two different characters.
Alter egos.
Alter egos, and they don't always pull it off.
It's interesting.
Huh.
I agree, the alter ego,
And where do you think Ben Affleck will lean towards a better Bruce Wayne or Batman?
I think he's going to be a better Bruce Wayne because, I think Bale was a great Bruce Wayne. I think Affleck's going to be an okay Bruce Wayne. I'm not looking forward to his Batman. I mean, I'm curious to see what he's going to do with Batman, but from the teaser alone, it looks like it's going to be too much computer generated imagery connected to the costume. Right. It feels like it might go the route of, dare I say, Green Lantern.
Hopefully they learned their lesson there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like the way he looks too bulky and too stiff. And I think Batman he's an athlete, so he has to be flexible with his costume. That's why I think Michael Keaton in Batman Returns, I think that was the best costume, the best bat costume ever, because it was like, it looked like you could run in it and fight it. But the new suits, they just don't cut it for me.
I don't know. The George Clooney nipples. that was the best, right?
Right, right.
I think with the new Batman with Ben Affleck's Batman, I think they're trying to go more of the Frank Miller route.
Yeah,
it's more of a stockier, more of a static, brooding Batman almost.
Right.
Oh yeah, he's aged at this point. He's been ringer. I'm familiar with those stories there. I'd be curious to see how they do it too. I mean, in terms of suit, kind of makes sense. I mean, the whole point, I guess, with DC is, even though they're dealing with basically gods, they're trying to make it somewhat realistic. So if I have to go against a god, I'm not going to be wearing a regular bat suit. I'm going to need something bulkier to fight.
He's had the he has the armor suit with the lights in the eyes, which I thought that was pretty cool looking in the teaser. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he'll probably pull out some kryptonite or something to, you know, help things. Do you remember, this is a little bit off topic, it's animated, but the Batman Superman movie from the 90s?
A long time ago, but yeah.
Went up against Lex Luthor and the Joker. It was just such a simple story. I think if they translated that to live action, I think it'd be phenomenal. You know, maybe I'm alone.
I think you're right. I almost get the feel that they're kind of going to go that route with the Suicide Squad. You know, with Jared Leto's character.
Oh yeah.
You know, maybe we'll get that. I think competitiveness. That's
pretty, I think the casting was pretty spot on because his face, he looks like a skinny Joker. Like from The Killing Joke.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's got the look. And I saw like a very fuzzy image online of him in makeup and green hair. And it was a little weird looking, but I think he's going to pull it off nicely. And I'd love to see how he interacts with Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah. I'm
interesting to see in future films.
Yeah. He's definitely a wild card in those movies because I have no idea what to expect from Jesse Eisenberg. He's going to be a jerk.
He just has to bulk up a little bit. I think he'd be okay. You know,
I'm not sure. From the pictures, it doesn't look like he's doing much bulking.
Yeah,
he has a shaved head, but that's right, about right. It.
And he's like not like maybe half a foot shorter than Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
So I don't know how. I mean, he'll have to like don a pretty heavy duty suit of armor to battle Superman because
I don't know. Kevin Spacey fought Superman. And he didn't have.
That's a good.
Well, Cal Penn also beat him up a little bit. That's you don't need armor.
That's true.
That's very true.
That's true.
Kumar beat him up because apparently he stole some White Castle burgers of his.
Right. That was an anticlimactic fight scene ever.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that brings up a good point. Going back to the Avengers a little bit with anticlimactic scenes, I feel like a big trend with boss scenes at the end, the final scene, it's very anticlimactic, and I felt like the last scene with Ultron was kind of a letdown. What did you guys think?
Just to clarify, we talk about the ones where they're fighting all of Ultron's robots, or basically where Vision just kind of pulls out his heart, or whatever the equivalent of a animatronic heart would be.
Yeah, the lone death scene, just him and the Avengers. So yeah, I guess you're right. There was a couple of Ultron death scenes. There was the heart pulling one, and there was the Vision kind of going kaput and. You know, touching him with his light or whatnot, but it seemed like they had no direction of how to kill him, and it seemed like it was just very fizzled at the end.
Yeah, too much going on. Like I said before, it's just too much.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of The Dark Knight Rises with Bane. You know, it seemed like there was just this great fighting going back and forth, and then what was at the very end, Catwoman just. You know, shot him or something, and that was it. That was the end of Bane. So all this buildup was just for, you know, just a shot to the heart or something like that. So it was like, oh, like, you know, they can't give the justice of having a great climatic scene as it deserves.
Yeah, with The Dark Knight Rises, the best scene, in my opinion, was in the middle, the first fight between Bane and Batman in the sewer system. That should have been moved... towards the end, I think, to the final sequence. That would have been the best, a better fight, and making it a little more bloody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was gritty, but I think it could have been grittier and just, they could have, you know, just prolonged the excitement, prolonged the intensity of that battle. So.
I agree. Yeah.
Nah, it might be the minority compared to you two, but I'll say, like, I was fine with that death in terms of that was it, just because you got, I think, a lot of action. And to me, like I said, as a fan, just, like, that slow motion where they're all fighting these different Ultron robots, and it's slowly, and you see all this action going on, that worked a lot better as a comparison to the intro, where they were all fighting in slow motion, and it just looked too CGI and too hammy. But on the flip, so it's like... That's where it comes from, being a fan and also like knowing movies and how stories have to be told. As a fan, I was kind of upset they killed off the character because I'm like, you might want to use this villain again at some point. You got a bunch of movies coming back, and you're essentially just finally killed them off. Like, with the exception of Loki, what's their other really strong villain? But then, as a person who's a fan of movies and good stories, I understand you need that final, you know, nail, that final blow to really end that story. So I was definitely torn.
Right, I do agree. I did like that nice world, like 360 whirlwind of each character kind of displaying their own talents and skills. I thought that was pretty useful. Until I reached Hawkeye, and his character, it just baffles me a little bit. You know, you look at all the characters and you see like Thor, the god, you have the Hulk, this big green monster, you know, you have Iron Man, and he's just this billionaire with all these gadgets that could just, you know, do all this type of stuff. And then you have Hawkeye just throwing arrows, and you think that that's just enough.
Yeah, but he's on point with those arrows. I mean, he is. He's talented.
I guess.
Self-founded on that, though, with his wonderful scene with whatchamacallit, with Scarlet Witch. He basically said, you know, this is ridiculous, I'm here. He kind of, I think that's a good way that Whedon, from his previous experience, was able to finally develop that character, though. Listen, I'm with these, basically, gods, these superhumans, and I'm here, I'm calling myself out. I would argue, I don't know if you guys are a fan of Whedon's work earlier when he was on TV, like said Buffy, but that was very common throughout the series with a character that he had called Xander, who was, he wasn't a witch, he wasn't a vampire, so he didn't have any powers. And in interviews he's done, he's basically said, that's who I, you know, see myself most as. So I'd be curious to see if he kind of did the same thing with Hawkeye. Like, if I was in this world with these guys, how would I spin it?
Joss Whedon is supposed to be Hawkeye, you mean?
That's maybe a reach, but I'm saying, like, I know that he put himself that way with, I guess, the Hawkeye equivalent in Buffy, which was Xander. Like, there's an everyman in a group, and I thought that when that very honest but funny conversation he had with Scarlet Witch called it out to the audience, because it's something everybody thought of, but it did it justice.
That is true. That I'll give you that. That one line by Hawkeye did sum up the reason why he was there, and it was definitely the emotional key, especially with Elizabeth Olsen's character. I definitely thought that was a good emotional uplift to her character, and allowed her to kind of be the next Avenger. But still, something in the back of my head just, you know, it's great, you know, he can say all these powerful things, but still, it's arrows, you know, I feel like, you know, this sounds corny, if this was quote-unquote real life, which this wouldn't be, but, you know, in the first, like, 5 seconds of fight, he would be gone, because he just has arrows, you know. So, like, stuff like that kind of puts me out of the element a little bit, but also, his character reminds me a lot of how the Hulk was treated. From time to time, I felt like for a while the Hulk didn't get his justice, and I felt like they didn't know what to do with his character, and especially with the Avengers coming up. I'm sorry if you hear snoring. My dog's snoring right next
to
me.
That's a loud dog.
I know. Sorry.
I'm trying to figure out what that was.
Yeah, I have a snoring bulldog next to me. But anyway, so like his character, especially in the Avengers, like you didn't really get that much out of him. And what I absolutely loved about the Age of Ultron is the due diligence that they gave the Hulk, and I loved how he was visually presented. I thought it was the best visual representation that we got of Hulk on screen, and I liked Mark Ruffalo's interpretation in his story. I thought he had a lot of screen time. I thought he had a lot of emotion, a lot of character to his performance. And I hope, you know, that we get to find out a little bit more about Hulk, Hawkeye. Yes, they kind of went into his origins a little bit. They made him out to be a wholesome guy who's just giving it his all. But I would like to see a little bit more going forward with him. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't know much about Hawkeye, but I definitely like the humanistic characteristics, the story of him and his wife, Linda Cardellini. I thought that was beautiful, really beautifully done. And it gave the superhero movie, you know, a human element, which I think we really, really needed. And I think that the farm sequences, you know, there should have been more of them. But, you know, or maybe have like a spin-off TV series of just about Hawkeye and her. Because I think that there's something there. But, yeah, I don't know. What about you, Kevin?
Well, I mean, in terms of Hawkeye, like any superhero, there's a lot of different, I guess, origin stories. The one I'm probably more familiar with, I think, is a more common one. He's actually supposed to be a reformed thief from a, and this is where it gets a little kooky, from a carnival crime syndicate. So that's how he learned how to do all his tricks and trick shots. Actually, that was his original name, I believe, was Trick Shot. And then he was flipped into a good guy by S.H.I.E.L.D. So any development of Hawkeye moving forward would be interesting, because he's definitely not your most notable superhero. Mm-hmm. So clearly, for example, audience were receptive to this kind of new backstory. So it would give somebody like a director, right, like Joss Whedon, to basically make his own character, which would be nice. Kind of goes back to the cooks in the kitchen. If you kind of have a clean slate and you can make a develop a character in the way that you want, I think we can get something very interesting out of it, opposed to 100% committing to the source material, which they've already deviated from, so that's no longer an issue. In terms of Hulk, I'll agree with you. I have not been a huge fan of many of the Hulk movies. You know, they got the formula right at the first Avengers, and then they definitely continued riding that train in the second. Ruffalo just brings a good another dimension to that character. You know, you just by looking at him, you see a man that's consistently struggling, which is what the Hulk is.
So. I mean, for me, I don't know much about the Hulk, but I think he looked pretty. The movie itself was terrible, but the first Hulk from 2003, I thought that the visual effects and that the way that they animated the Hulk was perfect. Like the he just looks so good. And the action sequences, some of the action sequences in that movie were pretty outstanding. Then you had a few years later, Edward Norton. That wasn't a bad movie, actually. But it kind of got buried under other movies. Like it came out in 2008, which was an awkward time for Marvel. It was a year after the terrible Superman 3. And it was, I don't know if it came out the same. I don't know how if it came out before or after the first Iron Man, but yeah, people tend to forget about that one. But that's a very strong film, and you know Edward Norton is a great actor. I think though Ruffalo might be the best Bruce Banner because he does have that very vulnerable quality about him when he's himself, and you could definitely see in his eyes that there's something brewing. So yeah, he is one of my favorite Avengers for sure.
Oh, I agree. Any other takeaways from this adventures? Any souvenirs that you're going to remember the movie by?
For me, Stan Lee's cameo.
He has to have them, right?
That was hilarious.
It's one of his better cameos.
Yeah,
That was funny.
So good.
Drop the Excelsior like he likes to, which is always appreciated.
How did that phrase come about?
I actually looked this up recently, and I'm going to be curious to see if it's true. That is the slogan for New York State. You look at the New York flag, it's Excelsior there, and he's a New York boy. I wouldn't be surprised if that's where he got it from.
It's very funny. Excelsior.
I think you're right. I think I recently passed the I was coming in out of state and was going into state, and I think I saw Excelsior on the Welcome to New York. So, yeah. How about you, Randall? All right, you said that. How about you, Kevin?
I gotta say, I would have to really go with Renner as well. Just he finally got his due to get develop that character. I'll even say that Linda Carlini. Obviously, she's not a real, I guess, character. It's just somebody they made up for this movie. That relationship kind of slowed it down, but it wasn't boring. Like you definitely saw it brought some humanity to this crazy world full of gods that, hey, look, there's a family here and there's love and emotion. There's true risk. Like, you know, there are real stakes here. You know, a guy with kids trying to save the world, you'd fear for his life. And you actually saw that for once, as opposed to, look, it's the Hulk. He just got beat up. Hulk's not going to die. Like, your every man had a chance of dying. So that definitely had a little suspense throughout the movie to see if he was going to make it or not.
Mm. Vulnerability, that goes a long way. It's something that the audience can connect to. And, you know, because it's not just gods and superheroes. There's humans too fighting, and they could get hurt. So,
and what did you guys think about the additions of the Maximoff twins?
The Maximoff, which ones are
those? So that's going to be Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yeah.
Right. Nice introduction for them into the world, the cinematic universe. They're good looking actors. I don't know.
They annoyed me a little bit. They did. Elizabeth Olsen, I really like. I think that she's a great actress. I really liked her in Marcy May. Marcy May Marlene. She did a really great job in that performance. And seems like she's making her own identity away from the Olsen twins, which I kind of dig. But she was, her accent was on and off, and it was really distracting. And Aaron Taylor Johnson, I don't really see where he quite fits in today's Hollywood. He did all right with Kick-Ass. Like, I think out of the roles that he's been playing, I think Kick-Ass is kind of where I like to see him. I really didn't like him in the new Godzilla. I thought he was just very forgettable, and it just seemed like, going back to the phrase that we've been saying, cooks in the kitchen, it seemed like it was just another character that just didn't get its due justice. So
the fact that he killed him off right away,
yeah,
which, you know, like, I guess as they were making this movie, I was curious to what they were going to do, because obviously it's one of those weird characters, I guess, when nobody cared about superhero movies and some rights were given to characters to other studios or whatever. Fox had the rights to them because he's Magneto's son. So he's
right.
So it's like, well, now we have him in two movies. So I can't confirm it. I don't be surprised. That's why they killed it off. It's like, well, somebody else already has it.
No, you're right. I was reading about that, and because it kind of dives into these copyright territories, they couldn't even say the word mutant. So they had to go around it. I forgot what they referred him
enhanced.
As. Enhanced. There you go.
Enhanced. Yeah. You know, you usually hear that phrase late at night on Comedy Central for magic pills. So it's nice to hear they're using that for a superhero movie.
Yeah, that's why he could run so fast, because he's an enhanced runner.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But
now, wait, was Quicksilver used in the Days of Future Past? Was he in that? Remember that scene?
Yeah, he was the little kid with the headphones. That's Quicksilver.
Right, the one in the, it's like in slow motion.
By comic book mythos, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are both Magneto's children, and they are supposed to be mutants. But this was their loophole around it.
Gotcha. So, enhanced. Yeah. Cool. Did not know that.
That's right. You could use enhanced more in your everyday.
Yeah.
See how that goes.
It's going to be the word of the day.
Nice.
So Pee Wee Herman throwback.
Yeah. Thank you.
So any last words on Age of Ultron?
I just hope the third one has less action and more story.
I'm going to say this, it looks like the path of the movies coming out, so we better get used to it one way or another. I know even if they start getting bad, I'll probably still be watching it.
Right.
Just because they are related characters I like, but it's the trend across the board, so it's not going anywhere.
Marvel is printing money at this point, so they're going to continue to do so for the next decade or two.
And now it seems like they're getting more intertwined with the cosmic universe, like the Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of see that kind of positioning with Vision and everything. So you know, it seems like it's just gaining speed and it's not going to stop, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I just hope that they introduce some new, like, you know, young up and coming filmmakers for future movies instead of just giving Jon Favreau millions and millions of dollars.
He hasn't done anything in a while.
Oh wait, no. Shane Black did the last Iron Man.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, I really like the Iron Man 3 with Shane Black's take on it. That's within the Avenger Marvel movie universe. I think that's up there on my list. Iron Man 3. I really liked how kind of centered they made Tony Stark and they kind of made him more humanistic. I'm not a big fan of Robert Downey Jr. I'm not, you know, there's something about him. His shtick kind of gets very old for me. You know,
I'm more of a fan of his earlier stuff, like
from
the 90s and early 2000s.
You know, like, this is gonna sound horrible, but like, I know he was a big like drug addict, and like, it just seems like he's still hopped up in coke. You know, it just seems like he's still feeling the aftermath, and he's just like going a mile a minute, and I just kind of want to just grab him and just say, you know, just slow down a little bit, just, you know, just calm down.
On the shtick, it wears thin pretty quickly.
Yeah. He's also playing an alcoholic. I mean, let's
yeah, that's true.
Iron Man is an alcoholic.
So why is he why is he a fast talker? You're right. But I mean, he does play that cocky SOB very well, though. You know, I guess that's how I like my SOBs, fast talking, and, you know, it's, you know, he's an enhanced SOB. Yeah, yeah. So as far as star ratings go, Kevin, you mentioned that you're giving it a 3.5.
Oh, actually, I didn't. You broke up for a second. I didn't hear you.
With star ratings, Kevin, you're giving it a 3.5?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with that.
You're going to stick with that?
Okay. So out of 5, yeah, I'd say a strong 3.
Ooh.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a 3. Bold. It didn't grab me as much as you, Kevin. I don't know. It was okay, average at best, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in agreement. I think I might go a little bit even weaker in that sense. Maybe 2.5 out of 3. It didn't blow me away. I wouldn't even say I would recommend it unless you're a gung-ho superhero fan. But chances are, if you are, you probably already watched it.
Saw it at midnight when it came out.
Right. And, you know, you probably loved every moment of it. So I can't even argue with those people. But
Avengers Age of Ultron is basically the first movie, but with like 15 more minutes of action and better special effects.
That's true.
So, and actually, we didn't even mention the incredible voice talents of
that's true.
James Spader.
Ooh, yes,
that and good point. Stanley's cameo.
Yes, yeah. For me, definitely it was the attention of the Hulk and David Spader. I thought his mannerisms, his inflections in his voice just matched perfectly with a villain. I wasn't too keen on the design of Ultron, but you know, I could look past that. It was good. There's so much that you can do with making a robot look villainous, but as far as David Spader goes, I really dug his performance. Yeah.
James Spader.
James Spader.
Yeah, he's great actor, you know, even when you don't see him. You just have to hear his voice and you'll get like, you know, goosebumps.
I could see a whole movie with him and Paul Bettany just having a conversation. that little back and forth where they're just orbs talking. I'm like, those are two great voices. Go with it.
That is a good point. That is a good point. That was a good scene. Yeah. Cool, guys. So moving on with the superhero genre, and we kind of interwove this conversation with a ton of superhero side talk already. But you know, there's a ton going on, as Kevin, you mentioned, about all these next Marvel movies and next DC movies. What are you looking forward to? Are you looking forward to the new Ant-Man?
To be honest with you, I think that's going to be the next Hulk. for Marvel. I think that's going to be the one that's going to bust. I don't see too much push for them on it. I think it's just another way to develop a future character that they can use in other places. I could be wrong. The way I think it could be saved, if it's kind of turned to a heist movie, because essentially the Ant-Man character they're using was a former robber. But at the flip side, to like, I think they're going to do right, even though it's really out there, is like your Doctor Strange. That I'm looking for. And so those two are the ones. Well, let me. Doctor Strange, Civil War, Guardians 2, I think those are going to be knocked out of the park. Ant-Man, I'd like it to be good. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I think maybe Marvel's getting a little too cocky, and they think that, you know, hey, like, anything that we produce is just going to be a major hit, so let's try, you know, these offbeat characters. And I think they were crossing their fingers with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think, you know, obviously that was a mega hit, so they're, you know, trying their luck with Ant-Man, but I'm not sure. Maybe the bubble's going to burst with that one. I'm not too sure. To be honest, I'm looking at the trailer, and I'm not loving it. It's falling a little flat for me.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Paul Rudd as a superhero. That's pretty cool. You know, the idea of taking, you know, the comedic actor and just putting him in a fight scene, I think that's a home run right there. And you got Michael Douglas making, you know, he's like, what, he's like the mentor, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what Michael Douglas's character is, because they, well, by the mythos, this is not really your first Ant-Man. This is actually your second. So I'd be curious to see if he's the original or somebody else that knew the original. The story is still unclear to me on which direction they're going with this.
Yeah, it looks like they're using the same formula as Iron Man. Just put a regular guy in a suit and fight crime. But this also has a Hulk element, like you said.
No, I'm just thinking it's going to be Hulk in terms of it's going to be a disappointment.
Oh. Yes, that's what I mean. I don't know. I think it might go the route of Guardians of the Galaxy. It won't be as big, probably, but I think it'll establish a cult following. And I love anything Paul Rudd does. I think he's
a great thing. I am interested in seeing Paul Rudd as a superhero. I think, like, he's one of those actors that I feel like, you know, it's his time to kind of make this huge blockbuster. I don't think he's ever really done something quite this big before. So it's kind of nice to see him, you know, get the limelight a little bit. But I'm not too sure. Like, even just looking at the trailer, like, they're constantly going back to the suit making him small, and obviously that's the whole point of his character, you know. But I feel like how they're going to balance that before it gets a little too tiring, you know. I hope that's just not going to lose steam within the first act of the movie.
They have to be really imaginative
with those
action sequences, you know, where you see him like really tiny and running into.
Well, in the trailer, that train sequence I thought was not like the best scene that they already showed us. That I think would break my heart if that's happened. But that's definitely on the creative side of it all.
Yeah, and it seems like they're not, you know, holding down the humor, the campy humor. It seems like, you know, it's just right on par with what we saw with the Avengers. You know, whereas the Guardians of the Galaxy definitely had that humor, but I felt like it fit that movie in a way that Avengers doesn't. You know, when I'm watching Avengers, or you know, even though it's in its early stages with Ant-Man, when seeing this trailer, you know, it seems like they're trying. It's almost like they're a comedian on stage and they're trying to get, you know, one joke after another so that they can kill it. Whereas Guardians of the Galaxy, it's already known to be this offbeat universe, this offbeat mess of characters. So they have that flexibility and that kind of relief that they can kind of let loose and be a little bit random, a little bit slapstick, and still get away with it. Yeah.
I completely agree. It's not every day that audiences welcome a talking raccoon or a tree.
Yeah.
Immediately. I did not see that coming.
The thing with Ant-Man that has me pretty thrilled about it is, Edgar Wright, he's written the screenplay. He was actually originally the director, but he bowed out for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
He did Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and This is the end, I think. No, the world's end.
The world's end.
I'm actually really curious because he knows how to take a genre and really turn it on its head. Like with Shaun of the Dead, you had the zombie thing. Now he's going to delve into the superhero world. So I think him plus, you know, Rudd and Douglas, I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
To be honest, I totally forgot that Edgar Wright was attached to the screenplay still.
Yeah.
So that might be the saving grace for me.
Okay.
Do you think the audience, the blockbuster audience, saw too much of Marvel this year?
I think, it's still a little early. But yeah, you got Avengers, which is big. Ant-Man, not quite so big. And what last year had what, X-Men? What was
it? Was X-Men was there, but that was a different studio.
You got X-Men and Guardians last year, two mega hits. And
I'm actually looking at like the proposed lineups for like DC and Marvel, and basically from now till 2020, it's going to be 2 to 3, depending on the year, superhero movies are going to come out with. So, yeah. You know, I'm going to give these guys credit and say they're spacing this out far enough like in the year to do so. Mm-hmm. Granted, Ant-Man's only come 2 months out of Guardians, but they also gave it like July 17th is, you know, that's prime time summer.
Yeah.
There's got to be some faith there that this movie's going to be good.
Very true.
Doesn't seem like it's going to be huge, but you're right. July is prime time for blockbusters. So it's interesting. I would have thought that they would have put it like as a fall release or something like that, you know.
I'd agree with that,
you know. Cuz Ant-Man is not exactly the most popular hero. Like, to be honest, I knew very little about him. I know he was like kind of gimmicky, kind of like reminded me of like Plastic Man's appeal. You know, he's kind of like cartoony, you know. But like I said, I'm looking forward to it. And also this year, the reboot of the Fantastic Four, which looks pretty good. A little dark, but the actors in it are very good, up and coming young actors. So,
yep.
What do you guys feel about that?
I'm excited to see that one. I wasn't a big fan of the original Fantastic Four, so the fact that they're kind of rebooting it, it feels a little bit darker. It seems like that's my thing apparently, and it seems like it's just a little bit more grounded. And yeah, there are younger characters, but I think they're promising actors. Who's the guy from Whiplash?
Miles Teller.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's gonna be great. He was great in Whiplash and Spectacular Now. So, I feel like it's gonna be good.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to say that right now. I think the only thing that makes me excited is the acting selection of who's performing it.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a reboot. It's, you know, I'm tired of reboots. Period in movies.
Right.
But I guess on top of that, the fact that it's not too far off and we've only seen maybe one or two trailers come out since then also makes me think that the studio's even not that, you know, that excited about this. Because here's the thing, you have great actors, but they rushed this project. Because I think it was another thing where the business comes into play. If they didn't do this movie, they were going to lose the rights to Fantastic Four and it was going to go straight back to Marvel.
True.
And Fantastic Four had a rush job of a movie way back when in the 90s. And back when Napster was around, or LimeWire, I downloaded that piece of garbage. And I've never seen such a horrible movie like I saw the original Fantastic Four from the 90s. It really looked like the Thing was wearing like Captain Crunch pieces on his suit. It was horrible.
Yeah, it looked like styrofoam. The Thing's look in the new trailer kind of looks kind of real, kind of nice. I'm curious about it. I'll give it that. I'll give it that.
But just looking at the poster right now, I'm online. Mm-hmm. It has a very strong similarity to the Man of Steel.
Mm.
That look very, you know, like. Like sunset, gray skies, you know, very dark and ominous looking. But I don't know. The director who's doing it, Josh Trank, He did Chronicle, which I don't know about you. I wasn't thrilled with it.
Oh, we disagree there.
Oh, that was a great movie. Really? Okay. Maybe I got to give it another shot, but the first viewing, it didn't grab me. I thought it would be like Cloverfield, but it just wasn't interesting to me.
I don't think I saw that one, but I do remember Cloverfield, but no, I don't think I saw Chronicle, no.
Well, it's similar to Cloverfield because it was another found footage type film.
Mm-hmm.
That was a perfect example where I think the director really got the relationship amongst all the characters right. You saw a buildup of friends slowly turning to enemies, or, a very troubled youth slowly becoming a villain. And he definitely directed that well. I'll be the first to say, your end battle sequence in that movie kind of was a little over the top, but very few people can get superhero movies right when it comes to action sequences and it's got people with powers. Mm. I mean, it takes a lot for somebody to be like, this just looks ridiculously fake.
Mm. So are you still excited to see him direct?
Oh, I mean, I'm curious. Yeah. I'm very curious where he's going to take this type of movie. I don't think it's found footage. It's just a standard superhero team movie.
Right.
So, yeah, in that respect, I am looking forward to it, yeah.
Right. As for me with the trends go, I'm just really excited to see how DC is going to catch up with Marvel. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward, despite to what I think Kevin's saying, I'm really looking forward to Superman versus Batman. I'm looking forward to see, the duel between the two characters. I'm also curious to see how they explain a lot of the disappointment that a lot of people came to hate about the Man of Steel. It seems like I kind of get the feeling from the trailer that they are kind of explaining why people might hate Superman because of all the destruction that he did first. But it seems like, not to call it a fish out of water story, but it kind of is, and it seems like that there will be some explanation to that. And the fact that, people don't really know who he is, if he's a god, if he's an alien, if he's, someone who's going to harm or be their savior, and to have Batman, who's, this grounded human who's kind of making these choices for people, to be the ultimate naysayer of this, I kind of like that dynamic. And I was always, even growing up, I always favored kind of humans that had extraordinary abilities. I gravitated towards Batman. I was a big Batman lover, so I'm always, I guess, going to be pro Batman. So I'm just curious, and then I'm really curious about the Suicide Squad. I don't know how Will Smith is going to be in that. I'm kind of hesitant with him. I'm not sure if it's just a paycheck movie for him or whatnot. But I'm curious to see all these installments that's going to be produced by DC.
Definitely curious to see what DC has in store. What I'm most looking forward to seeing is honestly Jesse Eisenberg. I have to go back to. I'm really curious. I wonder what the casting director thought when that idea popped into his or her head. Mm. Jesse Eisenberg is Lex Luthor. What? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really curious about that and how that's going to unfold in the film.
Yeah, I love Jesse Eisenberg. I compared to Robert Downey Jr., I love his shtick. His shtick, I can see, over and over again. I loved it in movies like Adventureland, and I loved it in movies like Social Network. And I think, when they decided to make him Lex Luthor, I kind of questioned it at first. I'm like, is he too young? Is he a believable character to be this conniving guy? And, looking back at movies like The Social Network, I'm like, yeah, totally. It fits very well, very well.
Yeah.
And did you guys see the trailer of his new movie, the comedy America Ultra?
No.
Yes, I have. No.
Wait, isn't Kristen Stewart in that?
Yeah.
I saw a poster in the movie theater last week. A stoner comedy or something?
Yeah. Did you see it, Kevin?
No, I can't say I have, unfortunately.
Yeah, That was a shock. I didn't even know.
Good at his shtick.
Yeah, yeah.
It's his thing. Like, he's like, I saw him in, he was on, like, Jimmy Fallon, like, a week or two ago. And that's, like, his natural personality.
Like, whatever his, I actually thought it was, as much as, I guess, The Social Network was probably the more popular movie, whatever the one was with the magicians, I thought I think he played the ultimate jerk there, and yeah. I believed it.
Now you see me.
But I guess to get back to you about future movies, I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. I think Suicide Squad will probably be the most critically acclaimed of all these. I think that one's going to be maybe not the biggest in the box office because you kind of can't compete with Justice League or Batman or Superman.
Yeah.
But I think that will probably be the best well-made one because you have less people to please. These are, with the exception of two or three villains, like your Joker, like... The others are you could do stuff with the other characters and nobody would really be upset with it.
And they can make it really funny too. Like you got such a huge team of offbeat characters, all these villains assembled together. That's ripe for comedy. Like that's perfect, you know, right there. So I think that might be the next like that'll be the DC equivalent of Guardians.
Yeah. Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Thank you.
Very good. And I'm really curious to see how they're gonna play out the relationship between Joker and Harley Quinn. You know, especially this is really the first time we see the Harley Quinn character portrayed on screen, right?
Right.
Or in the movies.
Live action, yeah.
Yeah. So it should be really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think is the ultimate future of comic book movies, guys? Do you think, you know, it's a valid genre here to stay? Or do you think eventually it's going to die out like the Westerns?
You know, superhero movies have been mainstream since pretty much, I guess, Superman in 1978. And they've been pretty consistent, you know. I mean, there's been a lot of bombs along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say within the last decade, we've been very...
Sorry about it. Oh, my God.
In the past decade, the superhero genre has definitely, you know, evolved into something really special. You've got very diverse filmmakers tackling, you know, so many stories from such a huge archive. You've got, you know, Batman and Superman have been around since the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got so much, 75 years of material to work with. So as for the future of superhero movies, I think we're pretty safe, and I think our children and children's children are safe too, because there's a lot of stories that need to be tackled, and I think we'll get to some of them, if not all.
I like that. Our children and our children's children will be safe because of the Batmans and Supermans in the world. Because of our enhanced superhero movies.
Yes.
Very good. Very good, guys. Cool. So any other comments about the superhero movie or superhero genre?
I got to say, I got to touch on Randall's point. Oh, excuse me, Senator. I actually believe the exact opposite. I think what most of these movies are looking to end around 2020, 2019. They're going to restart.
Yeah, and keep in mind, DC 2020, from when I last read, they're going to end with, currently going to end with Green Lantern. They're going to reboot that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So that maybe that is just a sign of what it was. And maybe it'll crash like the Ryan Reynolds character will. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's what's going to come down to is we're not going to see 2 to 3 every year at that point.
Yeah.
So they still exist here and there, yes, because they're franchises. But let's not remember, like, we are a very trendy, fad-based society.
Sure. And
right now, for lack of a better phrase, being a comic book geek is in right now.
Mm-hmm.
That sure as hell can't last. You know, everything goes through phases. Jocks were in before when we were younger. Now it's geeks. Now who knows what the next thing's going to be? And with that's going to come the taste of that type of, you know, person. So are they still going to be around? Yes, but I think it'll get to a point where if we're going to get lucky to get one superhero movie every 2 years instead of like 3 or 4 a year.
Hmm.
Interesting. I have no idea completely. It seems like it's just gaining speed. You know, it seems like when you thought it was going to be over, all of a sudden Guardians of the Galaxy came about, and it's going to just create a whole slew of new oddball superhero movies. And it seems like still DC still has to catch up, so we're definitely not going to see their side slowing down anytime soon. So I don't know, Kevin. It seems like it's still in full swing.
I'll talk to you in 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know what's still going to be around? Star Wars movies.
Oh, yeah. That
will die. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool, cool. Any other thoughts about superhero movies?
I personally wanted to touch on the superhero movies that, what were they thinking?
Yes, okay.
When they made them.
Okay.
Steel is, I think, one of the best what were they thinking movies, where, hey, let's put Shaq in a metal suit and make people pay money to see it. The Ghost Rider movies with Nicolas Cage were horrible.
They were horrible, but they were crazy Nicolas Cage at his best.
Right.
You know, like if you want to see just crazy Nicolas Cage, you know, that's a good watch.
Well, yeah, but you could check out Vampire's Kiss, which is, yeah, I think, him at his craziest.
Not to sidetrack, but I was thinking about this not too long ago. When was the last time Nicolas Cage had a movie that actually played in movie theaters?
I don't know. The past, like, 3 years, it's all on Netflix. I was like, when was this in theaters?
Yeah.
Like, they're terrible. Terrible movies.
I was looking through Redbox yesterday, and there were so many Nick Cage movies, and I'm like, when did these come out? And I'm like, when was the last time we saw him in the theater? Like,
did movie studios just decide, let's just not give this guy work anymore?
Weird
and offbeat.
I know he was bankrupt at one point, so I think he just took anything.
Money.
Yeah.
That's it.
I would think he's paid up by now, but I guess not.
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, and here's another superhero-related thing, and Nicolas Cage. You know, you guys know he was going to be Superman.
Back
in the 90s.
Yeah.
And this guy, he was promoting it at Comic-Con. He made a documentary chronicling the production of Superman Lives in 1997, Tim Burton, Nicolas Cage, Superman.
Yeah.
Where he was supposed to battle a giant spider.
Yeah, I've heard the Kevin Smith podcast on that. If anybody has not heard that, you should hear Kevin's rant on that. It's absolutely brilliant.
So good.
Wasn't Kevin Smith supposed to be the writer?
I think he wrote a draft. Yeah. I don't know if that was what was going to go, what was going to be the actual script. But yeah, probably. It was him as the writer, Tim Burton as director. And I think it would have been a crazy movie. Nicolas Cage as Superman?
crazy might be the word to use.
Yes, yes. And Tim Burton's craziness on top of that. I think it would have been a cool movie.
Superman's not meant to be
crazy. Yeah. I could just imagine just like Nick Cage's like eyebrow twitch for like Superman, you know, like very like hoity-toity Superman. Yeah. That would be interesting.
And I think before Nicolas Cage, they wanted Sean Penn.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah. That just doesn't make sense.
I know.
They just probably went for big names at that point. Be like, who's making money right now? Right. Tom Cruise? Nah, too short. Sean Penn? Sure.
Yep.
What are some other duds that you could think of?
There are two that I actually hold near and dear to my heart, but I know they're absolutely horrible, but I like to call them awesomely bad.
Yeah.
And that is Blank Man and Meteor Man. They may not be in comics, I can watch those movies anytime, and I will laugh hysterically at how bad they are.
Blank Man, man, I haven't seen that in a long time. That was one of those movies that was constantly playing, like on HBO whatnot, and I remember loving that. I remember, I think at one point I was trying to like invent stuff on my own, like because I was inspired by Blank Man.
Your own utility belt?
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah, I'm driving my parents crazy.
His noonchucks with the flashlights. Oh, anyway. Hey, and that's when Jason Alexander was a bad guy, too.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love David Alan Greer as the
other guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a cult classic.
I don't know about that, but it's...
Among Us.
It's out there. Well, yeah. I mean, I actually made Randall watch Meteor Man not too many...
I didn't love too long it, ago. To be honest.
No, but...
Yeah.
It left an impression on you, didn't it?
It did. Robert Townsend, he's a terrible actor.
I got to catch up with that. I don't think I watched that. Yeah. I did. I did write down right now, have to rewatch Blank Man. So I'm gonna pick that up soon.
That's a no DVD. Joke, my DVR just, like, because I got TiVo and it randomly does stuff. Apparently TiVo knows me better than I know myself because it did record Blank Man today. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Wow, where was that playing?
I'd have to turn it on and check it out. But
oh my god, that's awesome. That's great. That's great. Cool.
Trying to think of other failed superhero movies.
Your favorite, the first Marvel superhero movie.
What?
You love Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck.
I think it's okay. It's fun. It's underappreciated, even by George Lucas, who technically disowned the movie. But no, it's a fun movie.
And aren't they like in talks of remaking that?
Yeah, because of the last scene of Guardians.
Yeah,
you know, the cameo by Howard the Duck. They want to, I think, make a spinoff of that.
Is that true? Yeah. I just thought that was like a treat to like people who suffered through that movie.
I think they're going to make a standalone Howard the Duck movie, and I think that's awesome.
All right.
If they make it in the same style as Guardians, I think it's going to be a hoot.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree.
Because the 80s one, that was a fun movie. It's got Leia Thompson, Tim Robbins, Jeffrey Jones as the villain. And I think the visual effects were by Industrial Light and Magic, so because you got George Lucas. So at the time, it's pretty big budget, and it just didn't really catch on. I mean, I saw it the first time on like TBS at like 1 o'clock in the morning. It's awesome.
All right.
Yeah.
Here's my question. I'm curious about you two. Which movie would you suffer through more, Batman and Robin, or Superman: The Quest for Peace?
God, I love that nipple suit, you know? it has to be a tie.
Yeah. No, I think I kind of like Superman 4 better.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great villain, and he was dubbed by Gene Hackman, because he was supposed to be Gene Hackman's clone, so he had the same voice, a much deeper Gene Hackman voice, though. So, yeah.
There's interesting.
Yeah. It's a fun movie. It's terrible, but it's got some fun action sequences.
You know, I agree. I think with the Batman, the Batman Forever, and then Batman Robin, Joel Schumacher. I think it was great that it was Nolan's time to shine after that, and kind of made it into the genre or the type of films that it deservingly should have been. Even though, like, you know, it's you gotta love Jim Carrey. You know, I always go back to Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey, the Riddler, that was a fun performance. But just looking back at those movies, you know, they were just complete pieces of crap. Just there's no way around it. Nostalgia can't help that, you know.
And Schumacher was, I think, gonna do a third one.
Yeah, which is funny because I like Joel Schumacher. I love Falling Down.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of my favorite movies. Like, that's one movie I can always just put on and go back on.
And of course, The Lost Boys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But
as long as it's not Batman, he's okay.
Yeah.
It just proves you got to be a fan to do it. Schumacher was not a fan. The first thing is, let's make this brighter. Like, right. I think his only knowledge of Batman at that point was probably the Adam West stuff,
right.
Which, you know, was a special thing for its time.
Yeah.
And Those two films really feel like the studio just had its hand in the making of it at all times, you know. Whereas you could see, I mean, the reason why I believe Tim Burton didn't do Batman 3 and kind of straight away was because of differences between the studio and, you know, even Nolan, you know, he took a risk and, because of that success, the studio said, oh, you can do whatever you want. So it just seems like, you know, when the studio does have their hand in the pot, it just leaves room for disaster.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, Burton kind of, you know, bowed out a little in a subtle way because he actually produced Batman Forever. Trivia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he produced it, but I don't know why he, yeah, I guess because differences with the studio, he did, they didn't want to grant him direct, you know, the director's chair.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
That's why it's not quite as bad as Batman and Robin because it's got the sort of the Burton feel, sort of.
I like Val Kilmer.
He's my least favorite Batman and Bruce Wayne. Yeah.
Clooney beats Kilmer?
I think Clooney, while stiff and kind of boring, I think Clooney was a better Batman, but maybe Kilmer's better Bruce Wayne.
I liked Val Kilmer. I thought he definitely had the look, you know. But
he's too young for my taste. I don't know.
I don't know, dude.
Yeah, Clooney, I think at that point Clooney was becoming, I think that was right on the tail end of ER, I believe, and like he was like right there with his stardom. So like I think it felt like George Clooney. I almost get the impression of like how it feels with Ben Affleck right now. Like all I'm seeing with Batman is that, you know, I'm seeing more Ben Affleck than anything. So it feels like the same way with George Clooney's Batman, where like I don't see Batman, I just see George Clooney.
Hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting statement.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I guess speaking of Affleck, though, Daredevil, we can't forget about that.
I kind of like Daredevil, to be honest. I didn't think it was that terrible.
Well, that was supposed to be. That's another one where studios got involved. That's supposed to be Jar, Favreau, who clearly shows he can make a movie like Iron Man.
Yeah.
Did not have control, and then that garbage showed up.
Yeah.
No, there is a director's cut on DVD now.
Oh, I gotta watch that. Yeah, that'd be probably better.
Yeah, I don't think it's been a while since I watched that Daredevil, but I don't recall having Ben Affleck being the least favorite part of that for me. I just think overall the tone didn't really match my expectations, which is the reason why I love what's going on in Netflix right now with Daredevil. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm up to episode 9, and I'm just eating it up.
Mm-hmm.
I have only gotten through part of one episode, so can you please, you know, do not spoil it.
Is there? Oh, it's just because you're in the beginning of it, or
I'm trying to get through it myself.
It's not for kids, and that's why it's good. Let's leave it like that.
Oh,
it's dark. Interesting. It's rich.
It
gets a little psychological in a good way.
It's definitely heavy, though. Like I'm still working on it. It's whereas like some Netflix seasons, I could just fly through. This like. I have to pace myself a little bit.
You know? Oh, you feel bad about humanity while you watch that.
Yeah, but I forgot the actor's name who plays Kingpin, who is on as Law and Order.
Oh yeah, what's it? He's good.
Vince D'Onofrio.
Yes, that guy.
He was the guy who blew his brains out in Full Metal Jacket.
That no way, that's the same guy.
It is.
Really?
So the villain in Men in Black. He was
Men in Black, yes. Really? He goes way back to Full Metal Jacket? Really?
Full Metal, that was him, like he was in his 20s and he a very heavy young man.
But he can't be the guy from Men in Black then. That was
trust me.
It is.
Yeah. Vincent D'Onofrio.
He plays a troubled soul very well.
Oh,
Kingpin?
Yeah.
I thought he was like a bloodthirsty gangster.
I'm not going to spoil it for you, but they give Kingpin layers. Like,
yeah.
He's not a complete villain. There's a depth to him.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. And yeah, he plays that character. And that's something I did not get, nor did I even know existed with the original Daredevil. I didn't know that a Kingpin could have that much depth. Him. Yeah, so I think that just great choices, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else with superheroes?
I mean, I like to think of future films and like fantasy casting of like certain villains and heroes.
I like it. Yeah, what do you think?
Who do you think would be a good Riddler?
Oof, good Riddler.
Psychological actor. It's got nuts.
I like that. That's a good one. That might take some thinking.
I've got at least two options.
I do.
Go for it, Randall.
Jim Parsons.
No. No. Okay. Really?
He's typecast though.
But yeah, I think he'd be he'd have a lot of fun in the role. I think.
I don't know. I don't know. He seems pretty one note type of guy for me, and not in a good way, like a Jesse Eisenberg. You know, like that's his shtick. It seems like Kevin said, like he is a little typecast. It's you got to really think of the full gamut. I would have never thought of a Jared Leto to be a Joker, you know, but it makes sense. You know?
Right.
It makes sense. So, I mean, you could really, now that we do have a darker spin on things and comic book movies are taking more dramatic and thriller approach like that, I mean, really the acting world is your oyster, you know? That's a good question, Riddler.
Or Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, I probably see him more than Jim Parsons, just like especially with his performance from Gone Girl.
Mm.
You know, a little bit.
I actually missed that one. I need to see it.
Oh, you gotta see it, yeah. Yeah. what do you think, Kevin?
I haven't seen, unfortunately, Gone Girl, but I'll say visually it works. There, he had it on all over Twitter.
Oh yeah,
like he dressed that way for his kids, him and his husband or whatever, and they were in different like villain costumes, and they were so he was dressed as the Riddler, and it worked.
Yeah.
He can play intelligent. He was Doogie Howser. Can he play nuts though? That would be my question.
Like random acts of
violence. Like straight up, you're insane.
Yeah.
Like I've seen him do comedy. I've seen him do intelligent. I've seen him be a playboy, which is not necessarily needed for that. You know, the only thing I could think of would be the guy who's playing Riddler right now in Gotham, like someone like that. Like, you might need a no-name that just has depth, which it'd be interesting to see if they're ever going to make that full connection between TV and movies for any superhero stuff, because they're making connections and storylines, but people really aren't crossing over in terms of acting.
Right. Well, Gotham is a prequel to Dark Knight.
You got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. You got Flash. You got Green Arrow coming out. Supergirl's coming out soon. Like, they have stuff where they touch on storylines, but they really don't touch with actors. So I'd be curious about that.
Do you guys know if DC kind of plays by the same rules of, like, once you play a certain actor or character, that actor can no longer be another type of character?
You mean like Chris Evans is Human Torch?
Yeah.
Different studios.
Yeah, that's different studios. But like, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. can't be any other character but Iron Man, you know? I think the only exception is, I forgot the guy's name that played Vision in Jarvis. That's kind of the only crossover.
Paul Bettany?
Yes, Paul Bettany. I think that was the only exception to the rule, and they kind of made it a little bit loose where one kind of transformed into the other in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of...
The beauty of Jarvis was you never actually saw him, you just heard his voice.
Right. So I think that's probably where they got away with it, but it seems like they're known for like sticking with their characters. I think... Even, I believe, some of the characters from S.H.I.E.L.D. Actually played a role in the Age of Ultron movie. The lab scientist, the female scientist who created the new tissue, she was a character from S.H.I.E.L.D., I believe.
I'd have to double check that. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in S.H.I.E.L.D., one of the like heads of S.H.I.E.L.D., in Captain America Winter Soldier was in the TV show.
Okay.
I guess in terms of minor characters, yeah, I guess what's really the big deal?
Right.
But they have, like, the true superheroes in some of these places. You never see that crossover.
That's true. Well, That's TV versus movie, right? Stardom. So.
True. Right. But they're trying to blend the lines a little bit.
True. So the question still remains, who makes a good Riddler? And this question is going to plague my mind now, Randall. Thanks a lot.
I'm sticking to Jim Parsons.
How about...
He's a very good actor. And
he's doing all right on Broadway.
True. Let's see him in a big budget blockbuster.
I can see it. I'm looking at his IMDb profile right now. More I look at him, the more I could see him as a Riddler.
And he would be really funny, and that's what a dark movie like, you know, a future Batman movie needs, is, you know, a little humor. Because Batman versus Superman, I don't see a lot of, you know, one-liners. And
no, they're avoiding that purposely.
It just seems very bleak. But we'll see. Maybe it'll be real. It might have some jokes in there. But...
if they do, I feel like it'll come from Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah. To be honest. That's true. Definitely. Like I said before, Suicide Squad. That's going to generate a lot of laughter.
Talking about just casting choices, I did like the casting choice with Aquaman. I think that... I don't know the character's name from the Game of Thrones, but just his presence makes for a good underwater Poseidon type of character that looks really cool.
Jason Momoa.
There you go.
Right.
Yes, yeah. He's a Hawaiian.
Yeah,
he's like a big buff guy. I think he's a model, actually.
Yeah. It's interesting. Aquaman was. One of those comic books I just didn't get growing up. I even reread it not too long ago, and it's a little odd to me. It doesn't play off like other Justice League characters, in my opinion. But
don't think young boys like to know about a guy who could talk to fish.
the concept sounds cool. You know, that concept is cool. It just the comic book just didn't do it for me though. But
Aquaman is an interesting character, sort of.
Yeah.
But he has to be, like, for it to be interesting, he has to be, like, on a beach.
Yeah. That
stuff. You know, he can't be in the street. That's why in Super Friends, he's always, like, in the Hall of Justice on the computer or in Wonder Woman's invisible jet. You know, he doesn't do much, but there's something there. I'm with you on that one.
Well, you're more the fanboy when it comes to Aquaman. Like, you could admit it. You like Aquaman. I know you do.
He's cool. he's got a cool presence, but when it comes down to it, he is a little lame. Like, what can you do underwater? You can, you know, fight a giant octopus. It's silly.
Something tells me you're going to go against the rules with him, and you'll probably see him out of water a little bit.
You'll have to. You can't do much underwater.
Yeah. It'll be like a splash scenario. Yeah.
Splash? Yeah. You'll fall in love with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, there you go. Tom Hanks would make a good Riddler. There you go. It all comes full circle now. No?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
And what do you think of Wonder Woman? Gal Gadot, I think her name is?
Got it? Or
is it?
It's G-A-D-O-T.
I think it's wrong. French, so it's Gadot, I think. Oh. Ooh, we actually have the same exact birthday, same year, and everything. Yeah, random trivia.
I'll remember that.
Yeah. I'm looking. I didn't even look into her.
She's the attractive brunette from Fast and the Furious 6.
She was in. Yeah,
they all just blend to me. It's like oh, remember that Bond girl? I'm like, okay. Not really, but sure. I'm looking at her IMDb right now.
She's a tall, thin, good-looking woman. That's she's like all the other Bond girls. You're right.
Yeah.
Going to come down to the acting, and I only know from the Fast and Furious movies, which they're not known for acting. Therefore,
yeah,
have no real basis.
She's not much of an actress at all.
Wow, she played in quite a few Fast and Furious movies. Yeah,
like three of them, right?
Pretty much. Yeah,
killed her off. Spoiler.
I mean, I guess she could play the part of Wonder Woman. She has the physique.
Funny, people complain about the physique, actually.
Yeah?
Well, Wonder Woman's supposed to be a, you know, not sound sexy, but a curvier woman, and so people were upset about that.
That's why I thought, like, Jessica Biel would have been a better choice.
Huh.
Or, dare I say, Megan Fox.
Ooh, that's probably touchy.
She can deal with turtles.
Yeah.
I'm fine with her there.
Yeah. Now, Megan Fox is looking a little plasticky.
Oh, really? Yeah, I haven't seen her lately. Picture.
Yeah.
The last turtle movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which I heard wasn't that bad. I think it was from you.
I said it wasn't that bad.
It was okay. Like what you were saying with, like, all these comic book movies, it's really meant for kids, you know?
Okay.
You know, so, like, you know, looking at it from an adult perspective of someone who grew up with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I didn't get that nostalgia that I was looking for. But then again, you know, I can't complain because it was catered to kids, you know? So, which, you know, a lot... You can make a good argument with that, whereas with these nostalgic films that they're bringing back, like, should they cater to the adult or should they cater to a new audience? You know?
Right.
No, but...
It's a very good question.
Yeah.
That is the question.
That is...
Down to, I think, if it's a standalone or if they're trying to make a franchise. Mm-hmm. If it's a standalone, cater to your... to the audience that you know will appreciate it. If you're trying to do a franchise, you got to start young.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, you know, if you have that nostalgia and if you have, you know, a new generation to bring to the movies, if you're an adult with kids or know that will bring kids to the movie theater, you know, you can share in that timeliness, but also allow them to experience it for what it is, you know. And I think a good example of that might be the new Star Wars movies. Even, do I dare say, the prequels, And that's because, you know, us, generations older than us, you know, we have that nostalgia factor. But, you know, the kids at the time and the kids that are growing up with the Clone Wars, the animation area, that, you know, is a whole different thing for them. You know, that's their own Star Wars. So, you know, you can appreciate it, but also at the same time, we have ours and they have theirs, you know. So I like the idea of having it sanctioned like that. You know,
really?
I think
the nostalgia should flow through the new movies. I'm very nostalgic when it comes to science fiction and fantasy. And, you know, like, I think, like, I'm going back to the thing with, you know, the future generations of audiences. You know, there's a lot of great, great movies, and a lot of these great movies are being rebooted and remade, and the original is just totally ignored. And I think, you know, kids today and tomorrow, they need to see those. You know, they need to see Back to the Future and Ghostbusters. Those are really quality movies. And if their first, you know, exposure to Ghostbusters is Melissa McCarthy, then I really fear for humanity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That puts you over the edge of fear for humanity.
I like your ideas. You know, you feel like new generation, our kids and our future kids are safe in with the new Batmans and the new Supermans. And now you fear for humanity because of the Melissa McCartney Ghostbusters of the world.
Don't worry about ISIS, kids.
No.
Melissa McCartney.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I totally get your point, but I think there's a very natural instinct where... Since we already grew up with a certain franchise, nothing is going to be better than that, you know. When we go into the movie theaters, we're seeing if it holds up or if it matches. So we already have that competitiveness. We already have that biased nature to that. Whereas kids, you know, like, this is their first exposure. Even if they see the originals, you know, there is that element of, oh, this is old, you know, or this is something that is from mom or dad or big brother or big sister. You know, it's not fully theirs. You know what I mean? So, you know, the way I see it, I like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because it allows kids who like it to actually dive deep and see the old stuff. My sister-in-law, for example, my wife's father remarried, and I have a very young sister-in-law who's 9, and she loves Transformers. She loves Transformers. She loves the new movies. And that's hers. You know, I grew up with the original animated cartoon, and she had no idea about that. So, you know, because she loved the new Transformers, I'm like, hey, maybe I can introduce her to this. And I got her like the first season, and it blew her mind. You know, so, you know, it's kind of cool to have this be like, have it be an all encompassing, you know, here's the whole King Kaboodle, here's a whole genre, but you know what? This is for me, and this is for you, and we can appreciate it together, you know?
Nice.
Very well put.
Yeah, yeah. But, I say that, but I'm really looking forward to the new Star Wars movies, because I think it's going to defy expectations all around. I mean, this, you know, the new movies out there, it looks like it's going to be way better than the prequels, and it looks like it could be a happy medium for those who grew up with the originals and those who are seeing it for the first time. You know, I think it's something that, you know, could really defy some expectations, you know.
Yeah, I mean, after the prequels, yeah. Oh, God.
This one's got Abrams. That makes me very optimistic.
Yeah. I think the thing that killed the prequels was the fact that George Lucas was the director. The Empire and Jedi were directed by two different guys that were not Lucas.
Yeah.
And those are the best of the franchise.
Yeah, I agree. Lucas, this might be controversial, but Lucas is one of those directors that I find highly, highly overrated. I think there's him and Francis Ford Coppola. I think, you know, people go gaga over them. And I think they're, you know, the last great masterpieces or great pieces of work that they created were 30 to 40 years ago. And as an active director, that's kind of heartbreaking in a way that, you know, for someone who's still producing films, that's still a filmmaker, their greatest stuff was, you know, even past our age, you know, like, you know what I mean? So,
well, I'm definitely looking like the teaser with Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Yeah.
That total, you know, nerd, you know, nerdgasm is the best.
Oh, I totally agree. I was like, oh my God. And like, I almost fainted.
I am so looking forward to seeing Mark Hamill again.
Yeah. Although I did question, why doesn't Chewbacca have any white hair?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, isn't he supposed to be like 600 years old or something?
I don't know Wookiee aging. So clearly it's not like dog years. So
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yoda is a couple of 100 years old. Yeah. I think the same goes for Chewbacca.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I read something briefly where it's like, I forgot who it was, but they in the original Star Wars, they showed pictures or images of old Wookiees, and there are some white-haired, very old Wookiees, and Chewbacca at the time of like New Hope in those three films, I think he was right on. Like, he was still young enough where if 30 years after, which would be these two films, or these films, I should say, he would still be in his youngster years or, you know, his prime years, you know, so. But yeah, I thought about that. I was like, huh.
he looked good in the
Yeah. I'm like, not a speck of white hair on that Chewie.
I'm definitely, it should be a fun movie. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be. It should.
As long as they don't overdo the CGI, which I think they will. But
yeah, you think?
Being in space, how do you avoid it?
I know, but you know what I mean. The three movies, the prequels, were just so ridiculously overdone with special effects. It looked like a cartoon. You know?
No, you're right.
It was awful.
I don't know. I feel like JJ is honing to the geek fans and wanting to do more puppetry. Seemed like he was like really vocal about that too.
That's good.
But who knows? It's also Disney, so they probably wanna, you know.
It could definitely go either way. So
yeah, I'm excited that it's in Disney's hands. I know when the merger came about, or the acquisition of Lucasfilm to Disney, there's a lot of people that kind of hated that idea, but I kind of like the idea that it's in this family-friendly hand, and you know, it means for longevity. You know that there's going to be more and more Star Wars films that we can all enjoy. You know,
yeah.
Where I think it was kind of dead with Lucas. You know,
Lucas only cared about editing one or two scenes and reselling DVDs, Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes. The VHS special edition, then the DVD, and then the Blu-ray box set.
Yeah.
I've made this lightsaber a different shade of blue. Please buy this new set.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's I'm kind of glad that it's in new hands. So.
It comes out at Christmas, I think, right?
Yeah.
Nice. That's a good time for it.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of good Christmas films this year. Quentin Tarantino's new film. It's going to be Christmas, so it's going to be a lot to choose from Christmas Day.
Very different type of film.
Yeah.
Do you want to see a lot of people die, or do you want to go to a movie with millions?
Yeah, that's true.
Is Christoph Waltz in The Hateful Eight? Because whenever he and Tarantino team up, it's gold. You know, he won two Oscars, both for Tarantino films. He's just such a great, unique actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He should be in Star Wars. He'd make a great villain.
He should be the Riddler.
That's just another guy where I can listen to him talk the whole time. Like, you know, he'd be like, if I ever died or somebody want to do a documentary of my life, they want Morgan Freeman to be their narrator. Nah, give me Christoph.
Yeah.
I can see that.
They give a little flavor to it.
Yeah, no, he's got a very cool voice.
No, it doesn't look like he's in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it probably counteracted the Spectre movie.
Oh, James Bond.
Yeah.
Is he the villain in that?
Yeah.
Nice. Perfect.
But I mean, Sam Jackson's going to be in The Hateful Eight. Kurt Russell. Which I'm excited. I don't know about you guys, but I love Death Proof. I have a lot of love for Death Proof, I thought Kurt Russell was great in there.
I love Kurt Russell in pretty much everything, but I actually thought that the zombie movie before Death Proof was better. What was it? Grindhouse was
Terror?
Planet Terror.
It's
so over the top and ridiculously violent.
I think I agree with that one. I agree, but I know that, like, you know, there's a lot of articles out there, like, kind of mapping out Tarantino's films from best to worst. Because apparently he made a comment that he only has 10 movies in him, and, like, this is, like, number 8 or number 9.
Really?
You know? So, like, he's, you know, quote-unquote, he's almost done with his filmography. But, so, like, there's a lot of lists out there kind of ranking them, and Death Proof is constantly going last in that list.
And he's not that old. He's only 52.
Yeah. He's just
a good maybe 10, 20 more years.
Yeah. I have a lot of love for that movie.
He really said that this might be one of his last movies?
Yeah, but from what I gather, too, he's the type of guy that is not always true on his word. You know, like, he has, like, 10 different concepts for movies, but, like, you know, he says that one, like, he was planning Kill Bill Volume 3 for, like, years. Like, I think he was gonna do that before Inglourious Basterds, but you know, just whatever happened, something, he kind of switched gears and did Inglourious Basterds next and kind of flowed from there. But he seems like he's not always a stickler with his planning.
Oh, and this is Kurt Russell's gonna be in it.
So I'm looking forward. Tarantino is one of those directors. I don't have to know anything about what he's making. I'll just go see it.
Oh, agreed. I think that's a great way to say it.
Yeah.
I try and go as cold turkey as possible to his movies just so I'm always caught off guard and I see something.
Yeah.
Which, with what he does, isn't that hard to do.
He
puts it through a little roller coaster in his movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Django Unchained was insane.
It was. That's probably on my end of the list, though, with him. I felt like, I don't know, I love it. Don't get me wrong. I could watch that over and over again. But it feels a little too polished for him. Like,
okay.
I didn't get the same feeling after watching that movie as I did when I first watched Pulp Fiction or Inglourious Basterds or even something like Death Proof. I loved Death Proof. But Inglourious Basterds, I thought, and I think it was because of Jamie Foxx's character, I wasn't so gung-ho with him. I thought he played it a little too wooden, you know, his character. Yeah. So
I don't like him in general, to be honest. He is wooden, and I really don't see what the appeal is. He was good as Ray, I think.
Yeah, but. Yeah. He was good. And I believe Will Smith was going to play.
Right.
But he didn't get it. I think it was a little too violent, and so I went with Jamie Foxx. But, like, I think the guy from The Wire was, like, trying to campaign to be Django at the time, and I would have loved to see him.
Like, Idris Elba.
I'm sorry?
Why?
Wait, who are you talking about?
I forgot his name. I'm horrible with names.
Okay. I don't know The Wire, though, but I've
heard it's he's talking about.
Great show.
I can't think of the guy's name either.
Are you on Wikipedia, Chris?
Yeah, I am. It's just there is a ton of people on this show.
Actually, Idris Elba wasn't aware. Him or Michael K. Williams. Probably Michael K. Williams, I think, would want him to be.
Michael K. Williams.
Michael.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Idris is the next Bond. Just give it time.
Yeah.
He'd make a great Bond.
That's the rumor.
Oh, Michael. Wow. Yeah, so.
Oh, this guy.
So cool. So with that note, let's transition to films we watched real quickly. It's a good segue because we were talking about Christoph Waltz.
Okay.
And I recently watched Big Eyes.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I've been curious about that.
I liked it. Kevin has not seen it, though.
No, by all means, talk about it. I don't think that's kind of one of those things where I'll be scared if I hear a spoiler. I could kind of figure out the movie from the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was a little dull. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the biggest fan of Christoph Waltz's performance in that film. I usually love Christoph Waltz, but for some reason, like, I kind of like it when he doesn't play a bad guy because it kind of throws you for a loop because he's so good at playing a villain.
Yeah.
And, well, spoilers, I guess, but he kind of switches in the middle and you kind of see him for the bad guy that he is, so it kind of turned me off a little bit, but I guess if you knew the story, it was kind of expected. But yeah, to be honest, I watched it yesterday, and I already forgot a lot about it. and it was okay. It was okay. To be honest, if you told me that this was this wasn't a Tim Burton movie without knowing that he directed it, I would totally believe that. I didn't get any besides the concept of the big eye. Images and that it's kind of gothic. It's kind of in the vein of Tim Burton. Didn't really feel like a Tim Burton movie to me. Yeah,
I agree with that. Yeah, this could have been directed by pretty much anybody.
Yeah,
and that's a shame because like there's a lot of material in the movie that could have been easily made into a standard Tim Burton visual spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with the art, they could have gone more into that. Basically, it's a human drama about, a very, frankly, kind of boring case. Like, what was his name in the movie? Walter Keane.
Mm-hmm.
He passes off his wife's art as his own and sells it and makes a profit. And I guess that's considered fraud. And, yeah, that's the movie. It's
the trailer basically explains that whole thing, so that's why I'm not completely thrown off.
I mean, the cool thing is that it really happened. It's a true story, but the way that the film unfolds, it's honestly not that interesting.
Yeah,
if you're really bored and you see it on Netflix, watch it. You know, it's got some very slight Tim Burton in feeling moments. Like there's this one scene I remember vividly with Margaret Keane driving down a road, and then she's driving towards like this hill, and it looks like it was used in Edward Scissorhands. This like green hill where the car was just driving up, and that's the only Tim Burton moment, and that was kind of sad because this was a movie that could have really used more of that.
I'm curious why you signed up for it. This wasn't a wide release film, right? It was just limited,
very
indie, right?
Yeah. Kind of small, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it just it went in theaters and just came out. You know, I think I think it was delayed for a while, and then I think it was a Christmas release, and then that was about it. Yeah,
yeah, it took a while to bring it to the screen. And yeah, it was definitely a letdown because I think this was one of his better movies in recent years. That's not saying a lot.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
was in the past 5 years he's given us some crap. Really,
I agree. What has he done? The
Alice in Wonderland.
Let me rephrase it. Not 5, 10 years. Ooh. In 2005, he gave us two very lackluster, disappointing films with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and which could have been a lot better if they might have cast, you know, Christopher Walken as Willy Wonka. I think that would have been awesome, but that's just me talking. Side note. Also in 2005, he did the disappointing Corpse Bride, which was beautifully animated. You know, it was in the vein of The Nightmare Before Christmas, but it just didn't really...
He didn't really direct that, though. Didn't he write it, or was it the other way around?
Oh, did he? I think he definitely produced it.
He directed it. Yeah, I'm on the IMDb right now.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. So that was okay, and it's gotten a cult following, but it didn't become like Nightmare Before Christmas Part 2.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I guess he was hoping for.
Yeah,
and then he did the CGI heavy Alice in Wonderland, which
he did Sweeney Todd right before that.
Yeah, that was okay.
Yeah.
I think that's one of his only, if not his only, R-rated movie.
Yeah. And,
I'm a theater guy. I like musicals and all that. I was like, it didn't do it for me. I felt flat.
It's okay, you know. It's not great, you know.
Mostly, I don't know. I guess I don't buy Johnny Depp as a song and dance man.
I don't know what Tim Burton and him, like, I don't know why they make every movie together. Like, that's why Big Eyes is a nice little departure, because Depp is nowhere to be seen. And that is so refreshing from a Tim Burton movie. You know, like, come on, give other actors a chance.
Yeah, I think it's just that director-actor combo, some directors have that with certain people. So I think they might have hit it off during Edward Scissorhands and just blossomed from there.
Yeah, it's Edward Scissorhands, and then Ed Wood was amazing.
Yeah.
I think Sleepy Hollow was the last where it ended in 1999. Mm. Then he started making crap. Actually, no, he made Big Fish in 2003, which
phenomenal film.
I love that. Yeah,
I think that's his last great movie. It's just such a beautiful story.
I think as far as like a masterful work of film, I think you're right. Big Fish. I did enjoy Frankenweenie. For what that's worth, I enjoyed that.
I saw the short. I didn't see the features.
Yeah, it was nice. It was there were some pretty unique visuals in there, and it was a nice little storyline.
Cool.
But with that said, I'm kind of interested in the next films that he's making. He's announced Beetlejuice 2.
Huh.
What do you guys think about that?
That was rumored back in the 90s. They were going to do Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. Where they put him in a tropical setting. Yeah. since Birdman, Michael Keaton has been very vocal about it.
Yeah.
So I think it might actually happen. Yeah. Are you on IMDb?
Yeah. Yeah. It's announced, but sometimes with the announcements, they're a little bit off at times. But yeah, I heard that too. I heard that's pretty much in the works. And it's not in here, but I've also heard with the success of the live action Disney movies like Maleficent and Cinderella, Tim Burton's tied to Dumbo.
Oh yeah. That should be cool.
That's gonna be horrible.
I don't know.
Tim yeah, Burton as well.
Yeah, it's. I agree. I don't know what to expect.
It's somebody else's property. You're not. It'll be another Alice in Wonderland.
And he's doing a sequel to Alice in Wonderland.
Right.
Really? They gave him money for that?
They're in post production. They're done.
Oh yeah, it was huge, right?
Oh god,
that was like, isn't it like $1 billion?
Like, it's big. Yeah. I think it's his highest gross. Maybe no, is it? Or Batman might be his highest gross. Either way, yeah.
No. Yeah, but. So yeah, I agree. It's on the fence with Tim Burton, but
yeah,
I was just not a big fan of Big Eyes.
Yeah, it's okay, not great. Yeah. I agree with you on that.
What else did you see, Randall?
What have I seen? Oh, well, it hasn't even come out yet, but Spy with Melissa Moon.
Oh, nice. How was that?
She had a good balance of comedy and action.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Is it good to see in the movie theaters?
No. No. Wait for it to come on TV.
Okay.
Yeah, and don't pay for it.
Okay. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's fun.
Nice.
FX. It's a rainy day. So it comes on at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Yeah. Why not?
I'm trying to think. I haven't really seen much. Kev, what have you seen lately?
Mine are probably in the vein of very simple movies, but I like to shut my brain off. So I went with the go-to that I tend to see every so often, which is Big Daddy, before Adam Sandler started producing consistent horrible films, a la Eddie Murphy style.
Would you say that was his last greatest movie?
Mixed reviews. I actually did like Click.
Okay.
Not everybody does. I was a fan. Granted, I also think it's I'm very family oriented, so that little message at the end I thought was well done and not overdone. That's probably what attracted me to that movie. But
I agree with Click. It's one of those movies where, like, when you see it, you just have a smile on both ends of your face, and you're just happy. That's the way I see it. It's not. Mind blowing. It's not horrible. It's something good to play in the background. It's something that to get the endorphins running, type of thing.
As opposed to Grown Ups 2, which nobody could tell me what that movie was about. I still don't know what the story is.
Yeah, I can't even tell you right now. It's about Grown Ups. Maybe
two.
And they go to a water park. According to the poster.
So, does Big Daddy hold up for you?
It definitely does. It's, it's what made him famous. He's a typical man boy. Mm-hmm. It has all those great, jokes, some crude humor, some smarter humor with it. I don't think it's really dated. It's literally a guy kind of growing up to become a father, but in a very hilarious fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can see that now. I'll see this 10 years from now. I'll still crack up. Great. To this day, if I go to a McDonald's very early in the morning, I think about that scene, see if I got up in time for it. So there's still some points that you can still smirk about. And as a New Yorker, it's always nice to see your city highlighted. And a lot of those places are, big New York spots. You got your Central Park, you got the Cage. That specific McDonald's is on West 4th. I pass by it frequently, so it hits a lot of buttons for me.
Hmm. Oh, he lived in West 4th?
The McDonald's he went to, he lived in West 4th. Technically, by that story, I believe he lived somewhere in Tribeca, which is a phenomenal area.
That's a great apartment.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't exist. If it did, it'd be obscenely expensive.
Yeah, wow.
Nice.
And, for those kids out there, the young ones, you could see Jon Stewart in a movie.
Yeah.
That's
before
true.
The Daily Show.
With jet black hair. He's like in his 30s.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites of his. And I saw it not too long ago. It's one of those movies where I kind of see nowadays, like, in bits and pieces. It's one of those movies where I can, if I wanted to, just keep going back to it. Yeah. Yeah, I have one of those this week. I recently watched Hot Fuzz again for a while. It was a joy to revisit that. It's funny. What can I say about it?
I'm in the middle of rewatching it myself. I think he's just got to the small town, and he had just arrested all the kids, all the teenagers who were drinking.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It spirals from there.
That just a very well done spoof.
Yeah.
That's all it is. I mean, I appreciate any good spoof like that. You give me that, you give me any of your Mel Brooks, your like Spaceballs, your Robin Hood Men type things. Even Scary Movie when it first came out, maybe not like the sequels afterwards, but if you have a smart spoof, I can appreciate it. Yeah. Hot Fuzz, though, I think is done the way, kind of what you asked about Big Daddy. That one isn't as dated as opposed to something like a Scary Movie where it's a spoof, but all those jokes are very much in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those jokes are very 90s related, where a kid could watch it now and not even know what they're referring to.
Right. And it didn't seem all that much British or dry, where some people may not have the taste for it. I think it's very broad. It's like we mentioned with Edgar Wright before, like I he's a type of, especially writer. Like, I was a big fan of Scott Pilgrim. I know a lot of people aren't, but I was a big fan. But he definitely has great writing and just a great way of positioning the camera and creating these very unique shots, sometimes flamboyantly, like in Scott Pilgrim, but also just subtly too, where you can kind of get a lot out of his characters and whatnot. I saw that a lot with World's End, where he just made great use of the camera.
Yeah. And I think it's a real shame that he's not directing Ant-Man, I think.
Yeah. I thought that was going to, you know, put him in kind of this Hollywood next level stardom, but
exactly,
you know, I kind of like it when I hear directors or filmmakers kind of like, you know, putting their foot down and going their separate way. It's kind of nice to see that, you know, they're staying true to their art a little bit, you know. So who knows, you know, maybe it would have been I shouldn't say that, because, you know, what it is now is the reason why probably Edgar Wright didn't go through with it. But, you know, it's better to have a director who has his whole heart in it than having a director that doesn't have his heart in it, or else we would have another, you know, Batman and Robin or something like that, you know.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I just hope in the future we get to see, I mean, it just seems right, like a superhero movie and Edgar Wright. It seems like it would have been the next step, and taken him to the next level, like you said. Because he did, you know, the zombie genre. He did the cop.
Right. DC should snatch him up at this point. If Marvel doesn't want anything to do with him, you know.
Maybe do like a gritty Plastic Man or something.
Yeah.
Didn't they steal a director already from Marvel? Like the original Thor director, wasn't that a woman? And they stole her for... Maybe it was Wonder Woman, I believe.
What, the sequel to Thor?
No, the original Thor.
It was directed by Kenneth Branagh.
He wasn't the first, I believe. They had a female, and then think DC just picked him up, or her up, I should say. I unfortunately don't remember the name.
Hmm. I'm not too sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Sure.
Yeah. Anything else on your guys' plate that you guys watched?
Yeah, I've actually, for the past couple of days, I've been, like, I it's in my PS3. I have The Sitter on Blu-ray.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Jonah Hill, right?
Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
It's basically a remake, sort of Adventures in Babysitting, where Jonah Hill is a babysitter for these three annoying brats, and they go all across Manhattan, and anything that can go wrong goes wrong, including getting chased by a drug dealer played by Sam Rockwell. And you've never seen it?
No. I know it's like kind of in the sequence of movies that he did, like right around Moneyball and Cyrus. I really enjoyed Cyrus a lot. So if he's like kind of feeding off that flow, I think that would be a great watch. Do you recommend it?
I would highly recommend it, but only because it's more of in the vein of like Superbad.
Yes.
Oh yeah. That's,
yeah.
You know, it's so off the wall, so funny, a joke every other minute. You know, rapid fire, and Jonah Hill gives a great performance. He's just so funny, and yeah, it's just a great guilty pleasure.
I actually argue Rockwell steals the show.
Rockwell does steal.
Yeah. He plays a great villain. He has a serious role, but in this crazy place,
yeah,
it's a great offset that you just laugh at what he says because you can't believe he's trying to take it seriously. Yeah.
It's just a great comedy, and it's been overlooked. I'd say you don't hear a lot of people talking about it these days, but it's one of Jonah Hill's best performances. I think he's just so funny, and his chemistry with these three kids is great. Just. Yeah,
I think that's another perfect one. If like the other movie was like you're gonna watch this on FX when it comes on cable, you'll probably watch this at like 3 o'clock in the morning when it comes on cable.
Yeah,
like you'll enjoy it, but you'll understand why you haven't seen it right away.
Right. But sometimes those are the best surprises, you know, like when you see these small forgotten gems and you could really appreciate it. Yeah.
How about you, Chris? What have you seen?
This might be a bombshell this late in the podcast, but I saw Mad Max Fury Road. Did you guys see it?
I'm trying to watch the older ones before I see that.
Same here.
Okay. So,
the original, which wasn't that great in my opinion, but I still got two more to go.
I think I heard that the second one, the Road Warrior, is like the best one.
Right. Yeah. I've heard that too. I've only seen the first one.
Okay.
And I actually saw it in preparation for watching the new one. And yeah, to be honest with the old one, I just didn't get it. There was so much going on, and I could appreciate some of the camera angles and techniques, but my head was throbbing when I ended the movie.
You mean the first one or the new one?
The first one. Do you want me to talk about the new one, or do you guys want me to?
I mean, I haven't really. I have seen any of them.
Okay.
I mean, I guess as long as the words are choice and not spoiling,
right?
Fine.
Okay. Yeah.
I saw the original, just like you did, in preparation to finally see the new one, and I'll say the original was a little slow paced. I mean, the only thing I really came out of that scene was I'm like, all right, this is a crazy premise. I could see them doing something with it, and heck, I'm man enough to admit it. I understand why Mel Gibson was a heartthrob then.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a good point. That is a good point. But I couldn't believe that it went on to be three movies, a franchise, and now something to look back on as a classic and to have a new franchise for it. Something like that seemed like it was just lightning in a bottle that, you know, they just took off with it, you know, and kind of crossed their fingers and hoped for the best, and it did. But as far as the new movie goes, I won't say much, just to kind of give you guys a break. But, you know, this type of movie, from what I hear from a lot of people, it either goes one way or the other. It's either you love it or you don't love it. And I got to say, I think I'm on the don't love it side. I realize that it might not be my property, which stinks because looking at it in context, like, the fact that it's post-apocalypse and it's just this rough and nasty, dirty environment with these choppers, it just seems like it would be in my wheelhouse. But for some reason, it's just the visuals are great. Don't get me wrong, but there was something about at the time watching it that just didn't connect with me. You know, but it might just be me. You know what I mean?
Maybe you need to see it like another, go for another viewing.
Yeah, you know, I think it might be the type of movie that I would go back and see it again to see if I could appreciate it again. It's one of those movies where I'm not sure if you guys get this feeling, but like while watching it, you might not think it's the greatest of greats, but in retrospect and thinking about it, it kind of seems a little bit better than as it was while watching it. Do I make sense at all? Like, you know, while watching it, you might not think it's a great movie, or you might not think it's a big mind-blowing movie, but upon thinking of it and making connections, you can appreciate it a little bit more.
Okay.
You know, so like that's, you know, like especially now that all the buzz is kind of out, and I think the forefront of the buzz is Charlize Theron's character and how it's very much pro female, you know, pro female protagonist, and I didn't really get that, but I think that's a good thing. The fact that it kind of plays gender as such an equal counterpart to one another. You're not thinking in terms of sex. You're thinking in terms of actors, and I think that's a good thing. So in my head, I wasn't saying, oh, this is a great step for, you know, female leads, you know, but in hindsight, you know, I could see how it could be a great step forward. You know what I mean? Okay. So I'm not to say that that should influence the movie itself, but there are some scenes that I'm kind of going back on and I'm kind of liking more. But see, I'm not too sure if that is credible for the movie itself, because at the time, you know, I remember looking at my watch a little bit more and, you know, kind of waiting for it to be over. But now I'm thinking about it, I'm kind of liking it more. So you're right, Randall. It might be one of those movies where I could appreciate it a little bit more on second watch.
Yeah. Answer me one thing. Is it a prequel or a sequel?
It plays it off like it's its own thing. So I'm saying sequel.
Okay.
You definitely don't need to see the other movies. So I could vouch for the first one. You don't have to see those in order to get the gist of the new ones.
Okay.
But yeah. My takeaway of the film is that there were great visuals, and I love the fire and the pyrotechnics involved. I mean, there wasn't really much use of CGI, so like the stuff that they do in the film was just like mind blowing.
Okay.
Yeah, so I give it that.
Out of 5 stars, how many?
Ooh, I would probably say 2.5 to 3 for me, like around that area for me.
So pretty average.
Yeah, pretty average. Like it's the type of film, like unlike Age of Ultron, I wouldn't really recommend it unless I know you're a diehard fan of comic book movies. But for this one, I would recommend. Like, I would just say, hey, like, you should watch it. There's some interesting stuff going on, you know, whether you hate it or whether you didn't or loved it, you'll still appreciate watching it and watching it on a big screen, you know. Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. But, like I said, that might just be me, you know.
Okay. All right.
It's not you. It's me.
It's me.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, do you guys have movies like that where, like, on hindsight, it's a better movie than while you were watching it?
I think there are definitely certain movies that cater to rewatching. I don't know if I would actually spend the time to think it over and over. To me, the one that just jumps out is as much, and I love it now, is the original Anchorman. I was not a huge fan the first time I saw it, mm-hmm. but as I watched it more and more, there's the jokes. Yeah, you appreciate the so many random things mm-hmm. going on in the background, but in terms of like stopping and thinking about a movie, I don't know if that even jumps to mind.
Yeah, I'm kind of like that with Napoleon Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of movies like that for me. I like classics, obviously. Mm-hmm. I just rewatched Beverly Hills Cop 3, and I think it's a pretty great action comedy. It's rated R, so it's gritty. It's, you know, and you know, they use a lot of squibs, which are, you know, bullets, special effects, so it looks like you're getting shot in the movie. So there's a lot of that going on, and you know, you got Eddie Murphy in sort of his prime.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of his last great movies. It's basically Die Hard, but in an amusement park, and I think that's a great concept. Yeah, and it's on Netflix. They're all three of the Beverly Hills Cops are on Netflix now, so they're just fun movies to watch. But I like the third one the most. The more and more I watch it, it gets better. Yeah.
Cool. It's that's like all three of them are kind of like blurred in my head at this point. But yeah, it's something that if they're all on Netflix, I would love to revisit them.
And they're all by different directors, so they all have their very unique style.
Uh-huh.
And the only, you know, the only factor that is constant is Eddie Murphy.
Huh.
And Judge Reinhold, who plays like a sidekick. I don't know. So, yeah, they're just fun movies. But the third one in particular, it's just got a great style, great humor about it. It's by them, by John Landis, directed Trading Places.
Trading Places, right.
Oh, okay.
Coming to America, all with Eddie Murphy. So they've got a good working relationship. So
cool.
It lends itself well to the movie. So.
Cool. Gotta check those out.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Anything else with you, Kev?
Nah, I could think of. It's basically was just that and lots of sleeping. So
nice. I hear that. Maybe we should go to sleep now. Who knows?
Yeah.
I think that's a good segue. I think we can wrap it up now. If there's anything else that you guys want to talk about.
Not right now. I don't think so.
I think I'm good for right now too. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. We're hitting the 2:30 mark. So that was a great combo.
Nice. Going up
for a good episode. Kev, it was really nice meeting you. It was really good talking to you. You know your stuff about superhero movies. Randall knew the guy to pinpoint.
Okay.
I hope to meet both of you guys soon. Randall, I know that we've been doing this for a while. Maybe we have to schedule a time to meet up and maybe watch a movie together. Thanks again, guys, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Cool, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Criminal individual, I'll be searching for the dark night, working in the shadows of the city. Hero with Jiggy, my crime committee, robbing every coffin, piggy bank blind. Take a journey through the mind of a red line. Bender, three-time felony offender, demented, brain cemented, mixing the blender, illusion, mass confusion, question mark, clues in, what, where, why, who's in, quiz, time to ask yourself who it is, shiesty B&O, underhanded biz, invaded brother's wits, can I live, corrupting, bringing all the misery and suffering, pain, you couldn't cure, with the buffering, rotating, ridiculous, rapid fire riddle, back, get trapped in the middle of the red line. Observe if you will, I'm in my hideout in the back of the hill. I crack a vault and I quarter by the mill. Co-defendants Johnny Blaze and Bobby Stills. We was blazing hot wheels. Turn the corner, you can hear the wheels squeal. On that ass fast was the Batmobile. I can tell by the demon on the grill. This was real. Alley cat screaming. I hear the trash can, garbage everywhere. Money flying out the bag, then trying to escape. Hold on with the cape, or else he'd be headed upstate. It's the red bluff. Screaming in the middle, and we're.